So there's this little-known story in this little-known book in the Bible. I think it's found in First Hesitations. If you got your Bible, you can look for it, but you don't have to right now. But in First Hesitations, it tells this story about when God created the world, and he created all the animals and man, and then he lined them all up. And first in line was the dog. And he said to the dog, he said, "Dog, here's your job." And you can look this up, it's biblical. Just not right now, it'll take you a while to find it. He said, "Dog, here's your job. I want you to lay on the front porch, and I want you to bark at everything that passes by. And for that, I'm going to give you 20 years. And the dog was like, "20 years to lay there and bark? That seems like a long time. How about I give you 10 of those years back?" And God agreed. And so the next in line was the monkey, because monkeys are just funny. And God said, "Okay, monkey, here's your job. I want you to play games and entertain people and get goofy and crazy in ways that you would never imagine. And for that, I'm going to give you 20 years. The monkey's like, "20 years to entertain people? Oh, that sounds exhausting. How about I give you 10 of those years back?" And God agreed. Then, next in line was the horse. And God said, "Okay, horse, here's your job. I want you to go out into the fields, and you're going to work, and it's going to be backbreaking, and you're going to sweat. But part of your job is to help man provide for his family. And for that, I'm going to give you 60 years. And the horse was like, "60 years? The dog has 10. The monkey has 10. Look, what if I take 20? You can have the other 40 back." And God agreed. And then next in line was man. He's like, "Okay, here's what I want you to do. This is your job. I want you to eat, sleep, have fun, just enjoy life. And for that, I'm going to give you 20 years. And man's like, "20 years? You offered 60 to the horse. Why can't I have more than 20? And God's like, well, what do you have in mind? And man's like, "Okay, how about I take those 20, and then I'll take the horse's 40 that he gave back to you. I'll take the monkey's 10, and I'll take the dog's 10. That'll give me roughly 80. How's that sound?" And God said, "Okay, sounds good." And so that's what has gone on in motion since the beginning of time. So that's why for our first 20 years of life, we eat, we sleep, we have fun, we enjoy life. And then the next 40, so you see where this is going? The next 40, we work and we sweat and we break our backs trying to support our families. And then the next 10, we play games and we try to entertain our grandkids doing crazy, goofy things we never, ever would have imagined we'd do. And then the last 10, we lay on the front porch and bark at everything that drives by. That may not be completely biblically accurate. I don't know. You might have to check me on that. But it's funny. The point is, it's funny how life works. You know, what makes that whole story entertaining is that it's relatively true, isn't it? I mean, just life is like this cycle, and it's kind of predictable, and it's just weird. It's funny. You know, it really is. Sometimes it's funny, ha-ha, and then sometimes it's just, that's just weird. Why is life like that? I don't get it. Like, one thing I've always thought was kind of backwards is how when you're young and energetic and you want to explore and have these adventures, travel the world, you don't have the means to do it. So you work all your life and you save up and everything. And then by the time you get to retirement and you've got something away, so now you can travel the world and explore and have adventures, well, now you don't really want to. You're tired. And then you're retired all over again. It seems like that ought to be flip-flop. Seems like we should be born into retirement so that we can enjoy this world, you know? It's weird. Life's weird. You know what else is weird? Certain groups of people live longer than other groups of people. And it's kind of predictable. There's been studies on this for generations. And what causes one group to live longer than another? Like, for instance, we've all heard of this one. Married people live longer than single people. And there's been studies on this. It's true. It's a fact. Why is it? Why is it that married people live longer than single people? And you, even going a step beyond that, wives live longer than their husbands. Why is that? I heard a guy talk about that one time. And he said it just kind of bugged him. Why do women live longer than their husbands? So at Thanksgiving one year, he sat at the Thanksgiving table with his dad, and his dad was an older, retired gentleman. He said, "Dad, this bugs me. Why is it that husbands die before their wives?" And he said, his dad looked at him with tears welling up in his eyes. He said, "Son, they want to." So if we can go to the next slide, Karen. Who lives longer? Married people. That's the first one. You know who else lives longer? Asian Americans live longer than other groups of Americans. Why is that? Why do Asian Americans live longer than other Americans? Some people think it's maybe because they don't eat as much fatty and fried foods. Might have something to do with it. But honestly, is a life without fried foods a life worth living? I'm not sure it is. Firstborn live longer, typically, than their siblings. Now, I haven't studied this part, but I hope it's not something where firstborn live the longest, secondborn live second longest, thirdborn live third longest. I'm number 9. So that wouldn't be in my favor. And you know who else lives longer? People with a tight-knit group of friends. People with really close relationships live longer than people without. There are studies that prove it. Why is it? Why do people who are part of a tight-knit community live longer than people who aren't? I don't know, but there's something to it. And the other question is, why does that matter? Why would it matter? I think if you look through Scripture, remove first hesitations, look at the rest of it, I think you'll find over and over and over and over again this emphasis put on community, this emphasis put on living life together, not alone. Scripture seems to stress the importance of it like crazy. And think about it. What are the most influential things throughout your life? I think when you think about what are the most influential things, you'll realize they're not things at all, they're people. I think people are way more influential in where we are in our life, good or bad, than our income or where we live or where we've come from. I think it's the people we surround ourselves with that play by far the biggest role in us becoming who we become. So I told you guys last week that today I was going to give the absolute best talk on small groups that you have ever heard in your entire life, and you came back to hear it. I may have oversold it a little bit, but it'll be in the top 10 or so, pretty sure. But from the very beginning, this church was a church that was designed around this concept of relationships. This concept of connecting people, really connecting people with two things. Connecting people with their creator, first of all, and then connecting people with other people. And we removed all of the stuff that usually divides us, like our income level and our status. Remove all that. We're just people. And that's how this church was kind of designed. And I feel like small groups, as we are moving forward as a church, and last week, if you missed it, last week our talk was all about the future of this church, the future of the River. And if you missed it, I would advise you to go to our website and check it out if you're interested on where we're going and who we feel God's calling us to be. But I feel like small groups play a crucial role in us becoming the type of church that God wants us to be. So we're going to talk about that today. And before you eliminate yourself from the equation, because I know some of you are, some of you are saying, I'm not really a small group kind of person. I don't really need a small group. Before you eliminate yourself from small groups, let me beat you to the punch, and I'll eliminate you for you. So reasons not to join a River Life group. Here you go. I'm going to cover all your excuses right here. One, naivety. You're naive. You think you don't need it. You think it's not for you. You think, you know what? I've lived a long, healthy life. I've had friends. I've got friendships. I don't need a small group. And I'm challenging you today. That is wrong. That is a naive way of looking at it. And hopefully, by the end of my talk, I'll have changed your mind. Next is temperament. Well, you know what? I'm not a social person. I'm not the kind of person who likes to sit around in a circle and share my life with people. That's not me. I mean, I get that other people enjoy that, but that's not me. I'm going to change your mind before the end of the day. So get ready. Next one is fear. You have no idea what to expect. Okay, am I going to show up and then I'm going to say how I'm struggling because my boss made me mad, or I'm irritated that my internet went out at home, and so they're going to come circle around me and lay hands on me and pray for me. I don't want that stuff. It's fear. It's not knowing. That's going to keep you. That's a great reason to not join a small group. Next one is past experiences. I was in a group before, and it was horrible. Terrible experience. Not doing that again. And I'll just say, I totally get that. I understand completely. I once got a bad haircut, and I'm like, I'm never getting my hair cut again. So that's wise. You go to a restaurant and get horrible service, I just wouldn't eat anymore if I were you. Here's the thing. Oftentimes when we've had past experience, maybe it's even deep. Maybe you actually were hurt, either by small group or just a close relationship. And like, there's deep wounds. Our tendency is to just, I'm going to shield myself from relationships from here on. I'm going to put on this armor. When really what you need to do is you need to tend to your wounds and heal. And you know what heals rotten relationships? Good relationships. How about that? That's weird. It just works that way. And then the last reason that you should not join a River Life group is busyness. You're too busy. Don't do it. Don't fall into the trap. You've got too much going on. I tell you what, this whole excuse of busyness, and it's not just with small groups, it's with everything good. It is one of the biggest lies of our generation. And it's so easy to slip into. And it's so easy to justify our busyness. Well, our kids have this and that. And my work is asking me for this or that. And I'm just saying, you have got to find time for the things that are good. Have to. How many things are you not doing that you know you should be doing? And you know your life would be better if you did do it, but you don't do it, so it's not. How many things are you currently doing in your life that you know you probably shouldn't? Not that they're bad. It's a time waster. And you know that if you didn't do it, it would free up some time, and your life could be better. But it's hard to say no, or it's hard to quit, or whatever it is. So you just don't get better. And on the flip side, how many things do you know you should be doing that you don't have time for, so you don't do them? Things that you know would make your life better. Maybe it's a few minutes a day to hang out with God. you know, and you beat yourself up over it. You're like, I know I need to be doing that. Maybe it's time in prayer. Maybe it's just getting home in the evening to hang out with your family. You know you need to. But there's a million other things calling your name, and you can't say no. And I'll tell you this, anybody you're ever in group with, when you join a group, anybody you're ever in group with is going to be as busy, if not busier, than you. And their stuff is going to be as important, if not more important, than yours. But somehow, they're going to find time for it. And maybe you need to as well. We get busy building our own temporary kingdom instead of being a part of his. So the point I'm trying to make right now, no matter who you are, how old you are, what stage of life you're in, you belong in a circle. Rows are great. I don't want to stop doing rows. I like my job. It's good for us to come together like this. But circles, that's where lives change. So, here's some reasons you belong in a circle. Number one, accountability. I'll tell you what, it's kind of silly, but I get it. I've had people who've gotten a little bit upset with me or with the church in general because they skipped church and nobody checked on them. You're the one who skipped church. Don't get upset with me. And here's the other thing. The lights are in my eyes. I can't even make out half your faces anyway. How am I going to know if you're here or not? But if you're in a circle, somebody's going to know when you're missing. And somebody's going to be able to call and say, hey, is everything okay? So there's some accountability there, and not just from church, but even from small group itself. Hey, so-and-so didn't show up tonight. We better check on them, make sure everything's okay. The next one is a sense of belonging. In your small group, everyone knows your name. And where do you feel like you belong? It's where everybody knows your name. You can come here and you can feel like a part of the church, but if you don't connect and make meaningful relationships, it's going to just be a church you attend. It's not going to be your church, you know? There's a difference. There's a difference between I attend the river and saying the river is my church. The third reason you belong in a circle is there's an automatic care and support team built in. So when all the junk of life hits the fan, boom, they're already there. They're there waiting. They're ready to respond. They're ready to react. They're ready to help you out. Give you a hand. Here's one. Fourth reason. Safe place to ask questions. You can show up at small group and say, what the heck was Josh talking about this morning? You can't really do that here. I mean, you could. I'd rather not. It gets awkward for all of us. But at a small group, you show up and you say, hey, I'm just not getting this. You know, I understand this thing about Jesus, and I understand this, but there's some holes that I need help figuring out. And you can have an open, honest, healthy conversation that gets you one step further. And then the last one, this is my favorite. Small groups are where you one another. What that means... In the New Testament, Jesus has all these one-anothers, all these things that he kind of prescribes us to do. To pray for one another, to love one another, to encourage one another, to bear the burdens of one another, to speak truth to one another. And small groups is where we one another. So every once in a while, we get people. I run into someone, and I totally get what they're saying because I use the same terminology, even though I feel like it's inaccurate. But they'll say, "Hey, I visited your church recently," and what I want to say is, "No, you didn't. You visited a worship service. That's what this is. This is a worship service. We say we're going to church. We're going to a worship service. Church is in the community." All the time, every day. The church is in each other's homes. The church is in middle school gymnasiums or football fields. The church is early morning in coffee shops and restaurants. It's at each other's kids' birthday parties. That's the church. And if we could, if we got, for some reason, got to a point where we could no longer keep the lights on, we had to close the doors of this place, ideally, the church would take very little impact from that, because the church would continue in each other's homes, and middle school gymnasiums, and on football fields, and all throughout our community. It kind of makes this part of it difficult. But the church doesn't cease to exist because we've got our groups, and they continue to one another. Now, we try to get our fill of church in rows. We come here, and we try to justify it. We're like, hey, well, at least I came here. You know, I get filled up when I'm here. And I'll just say, this, rows are where you plant seeds. And that's what we do here. That's what we do. That's what we try to do, at least. We try to plant seeds. But growth happens in circles. So we plant the seed here in rows, and then you get in your circle, and those seeds begin to grow, and they produce spiritual wholeness. And it gets us a step further ahead in life. It leads us to a place that's just a little bit happier, a little less stressful. So to think that, well, I can show up on Sunday mornings and I'll get my fill, I mean, you might feel better about yourself, but spiritual growth happens in circles. Seeds are planted in rows. Parents, why wouldn't you take advantage of having this incredible support system when it comes to raising your kids? Why wouldn't you take advantage of partnering with other people? And just to work through the muddiness of raising children, because there's mud all over the place. I got three of them. They're muddy, stinky kids. Singles. You might think, hey, I'm fine being single. And maybe you are, but you're not fine being alone. There's a difference. You were not created to be alone. And I don't care how comfortable you are being alone and how uncomfortable you are being around others. That doesn't matter, because that is not the way you were created to be. And instead, what happens is you let your insecurities take over. And you start reading between the lines, and you feel like nobody likes you and all this crazy, weird stuff goes on in our brains. And you miss out on the fullness and the wholeness of life that you were meant to enjoy through relationships, because you have some stupid insecurities that you won't tackle. And we all have them. But I've talked with enough single people to know that you guys, it'll eat you alive if you let it. Retirees and empty nesters, this is the perfect time for you to devote yourselves to one another. And some of you say, hey, I'm busier now than ever before. That makes no sense whatsoever. If you're busier now than ever before, it's because you're choosing it. And I get you got to work hard and save up for retirement and all that kind of stuff. But at some point, you've got to prioritize relationships. And you can say you don't need it, and let's pretend you're right, but the other people in the group might need you. They might. The thing about circles is what happens in a circle only happens in a circle. It can't happen here. It can't. Those relationships, those bonds, can't happen any other way. And the thing about communities, like we're talking about relationships, circle life, that's not even a Christian thing. That's just a thing. It's a human being thing. There's this really smart guy in the Old Testament. His name was Solomon. He's actually kind of known as being maybe the smartest guy ever. He's really smart. And he wrote a lot of stuff. And he actually talks quite a bit about relationships. And this one section I want to read in particular. This is Ecclesiastes 4:8. He says, "There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil. Yet his eyes were not content with his wealth." So, let's boil this down. Solomon's saying, okay, there's this guy. He's got nobody. No family, no friends. He's on his own. So he does what he knows how to do. He just works. And by working and by being alone, he's kind of accumulated some wealth. But it doesn't bring anything to him. It doesn't bring him any joy. He still just feels empty. There's something missing. If you jump ahead just a little bit, Solomon makes this argument. He says, two are better than one because they have good return for their labor. I tried to think of an example for this, and I come up with dumb examples sometimes, but it's the best I got. It's kind of like washing your car. When you go out and wash your car by yourself, you can get it done eventually. But if you got one guy, wax on, wax off, and someone else spraying right behind them, you're not going to have all those dried soap scum all over the place, and then you have to go back and wipe over it again, you know? If there's two of you, you get the car washed 10 times as fast than there if you just one of you. Because the sun's beating down, and you just can't keep up. And the soap dries, and then it looks like crud. Solomon's talking about washing cars here. Moving on, he says, if either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. We all know somebody who has fallen, right? Maybe some of us have fallen. And maybe some of us even have a testimony of, we had a group. We fell. And we had a group that came around us, and they lifted us up, got us back on our feet. And our life is different now. And it could look like a lot of different things. Maybe you fell financially. Maybe you fell in your marriage. Maybe you fell of an actual illness. Or maybe it's a spiritual thing. Maybe it's a moral failure of some sort. Remember those old commercials of the lady, "I've fallen and I can't get up"? I just realized that was an ad for small groups. I had no idea. So who in your life knows you well enough to be able to say, when they say, "How are you doing?" and you say, "I'm fine," who in your life knows you well enough to say, "No, you're not"? Stop feeding me baloney and tell me the truth. Do you have somebody like that? Do you need somebody like that? And I'm not talking about your mom and dad, because your mom and dad's going to take your side. Why? Because they love you. Dang it. I'm not talking about your spouse. I'm not talking about your brothers and sisters or your cousins. I'm talking about, who do you have a real relationship with, someone who can just be honest with you? Solomon continues in verse 12, and he says, "Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken." That word overpowered, I think maybe a more fitting word for today would be, it's another word that starts with over. Anybody want to take a crack at that? Overwhelmed, yeah. On your own, a broken heart's going to stay broken a lot longer. On your own, the chances of depression or something like that setting in is much more likely. On your own, your insecurities take over and they eat you alive. Okay, Josh, I get it, and I appreciate what you're saying. I think small groups are incredible. I think they're a great thing for most people, just not for me. I don't need it. I mean, everything's going well. My family's in good shape. Everything's going well. I don't see a need for it. Small groups a little bit like life insurance or like homeowner's insurance is a better example. You hate cutting the check, but man, when your house catches on fire, you're sure glad you got it. Small groups are the same thing. You might not see a real need for it, but man, when life catches on fire, you'll be so glad you've got it. And if you wait till the house is on fire, it won't be there when you need it. So whether you're married or divorced or single or it's complicated, you belong in a circle. Circles are better than rows for everybody. One more reason, and I've kind of hit on it slightly, one more reason that you belong in a circle is circles are preventative. And here's what I mean by that. I've got two teenage boys. They're 13, almost 15 this month. And here a couple of years ago, you know, they were just kids. And then one day, Josh, my oldest, comes walking by, and holy cow, he stunk. Man, I mean, seriously, like, the hairs in my nostrils singed like that. I was like, buddy, you stink. And he's like, no, I don't. What are you talking about? Like, no, you do. Do something about that. And now Luke, makes me gag. I mean, they really, really stink. When you're in a circle, somebody's going to smell your stink before you do. And they're going to be able to tell you about it. You'll be like, no, I don't. What are you talking about? They're like, no, something stinks, and you need to address it. You need to take care of it. Small groups are preventative. It's kind of like being in, some of you who have kids, who've had kids for a while, and you're in line at the grocery store, and there's a young family behind you, and the kids are like bouncing off the walls and licking all the apples and all those things. And you know what's coming down the road for that family. Parents don't know how to discipline. And you can see it. You can see it a mile away. That's what small groups do. They see you licking the apples. They're like, I see that coming. We better do something to help Dean. Apple licker. Or you hear a husband talking to his wife a certain way over and over and over. And you know how that relationship's going to end. Small groups are preventative. You can smell the stink. You can spot the apple lickers. And you can address it. And suddenly, you've got support before you need life support. And you no longer need life support because you had support early on. And here's the other thing for you married people, which, by the way, we yesterday and Friday, we had a marriage retreat that some of you took advantage of with us, and there's 9 couples that hung out for the weekend, and it was awesome. It was a lot of fun, and I think every one of us feel like we learned something. We're better. Our families will be better, and therefore our church will be better. And if you missed out on it, don't get jealous when our marriages are way better than yours. But something you might want to know, whether you're married or single, planning on being married someday or something, there's not a such thing as marriage problems. There's not. There's no such thing as marriage problems. There's single problems that you bring into a marriage. And then it's a mess. So how handy would it be if you're single, or even if you're married, to have this group of people around you who can approach you and say, hey, you know what? Sometimes when you talk, you sound like a real jerk. Your spouse can't say that to you. Not without you getting defensive. And your mom's never going to say that to you. But if you have a tight-knit group of people who care about you, who there's trust built, they can say anything that needs to be said. They can say, hey, I think you've got a spending problem. You might want to tackle that one before it gets too far out of hand. Circles are preventative. Here's the other thing. When life catches on fire, the church can help to an extent. When things go wrong, we can try to get some sort of system in place to help, and I hope we do. But we can never, ever serve the role that your small group can. When you're in the hospital, I can show up to visit, and I'll try when I can. I'll just be honest, I might have to look at my notes to get the name right before I walk in the door. But your small group, they're going to know everything you need before you do. They're going to be the ones to say, hey, I know your yard needs to be mowed. Don't worry about it. I got it. Don't worry about how the kid's going to get home from school. I'm taking care of that. Don't worry about dinner. We're bringing that all week. That's what your small group does. So I talked just a little bit last week about our new system of small groups, and I want to explain it just a little bit more in case you weren't here last week or maybe you didn't quite understand. So what we've done in the past is we've had small group leaders who have agreed to be small group leaders, and we essentially say, great, you're a small group leader till the end of time. And then somebody wants to sign up to be in a small group, and you're like, great, you're in this guy's small group until you just get sick of him and you quit the church. And that's been our system in the past. And it's kind of worked that way a lot of times. It's not real healthy. We didn't really think that one through very well. So we're trying to come up with ways, how do we make our small groups better, healthier? How can they evolve? Because the other thing is we get small groups that stay together 8, 9, 10 years, and then they get to a point where we don't want anybody else. We've been together for so long. We've got these really tight-knit relationships. We don't want strangers in here. We're so unique, which, like I said last week, every small group says they're unique, which means none of them are. So what we're doing now is we're creating what we call semester groups. And so we will sign, if you want to be in a small group, which, by the way, if you do, as you do, please fill out one of these. We've got these on all the seats, and there's some options what type of group you want to be in. And there might be an option that we don't have listed here. For instance, you might be, we've got married couples, we've got men's groups, women's groups. You might be like, well, we're a dating couple and we'd like to be in a group together. Make a note of that, please. We want to know that stuff, okay? So what we're doing is we're doing semester groups. So when you join a group, you're going to sign something and saying, I'm committing to this group for this semester. Now, at the end of that semester, what happens? Well, maybe you guys are killing it. You'd be like, hey, we want to stay together for another semester. All right, let's stay together for another semester. At the end of that semester, hey, we're still not done yet. We want to keep going, and we keep going. And you can do that, and you can build those relationships. But it also gives you an opportunity for, you get to the end of the semester, and you're like, my group leader was insane. I think I want to join another group now. And you can do that freely. You just say to your group leader, you're insane. I'm going to join another. No, you don't say that. You say, hey, I had a great time in this group, and I'm going to check out another group. I just want to get to know more people in the church. You know, it's just an option for you. Or if you're a group leader and you feel like you have to be on the ball week after week after week after week, planning and scheduling things for the group, and you just need a break. You get to the end of that semester and you say, hey, I just want to be a part of the group this time. I don't really want to lead. Can I just take the semester off? Or maybe you're a husband and wife and you've been in a couples group for a long time and suddenly the husband's like, I'd really like to try a men's group. Well, now you've got an option because we've got start dates and end dates. You can keep going if you want, or you can try something new. It just seems healthy. It seems better. And here's the other thing, too. I know there's this weird fear that I'm going to get in group and on day one they're going to say, share your deepest, darkest secrets. I'm just telling you, if you join one of our groups and they say that, I would run. I would. That's not a healthy group. We're not going into groups with the idea of making our absolute besties for the rest of our lives. And we're going to have to share every single thing ever. You know what we're going into group for? We're going into group to do life with some people and take a step forward. And do life with some people and take a step forward. Don't put all these crazy expectations. And here's the thing. Some groups, trust is going to be built to an extent where you can share all that stuff. But that's not the goal. That's not what we're trying to do from day one. All we want to do is help people get healthy and help people make relationships so that there's a support system in place so you don't need life support later. That's what it is. So you kind of, it's easy to scare yourself and think, oh, I'm going to have to share all this blah, and I don't want to. You don't have to. And like I said, if your small group leader is trying to get you to, shove a sock in his mouth and hit the door. That's what I'd do. So that's kind of what small groups are going to be looking like moving forward. Now, when I came to this church, there's a guy who used to lead music, and he actually did a lot of the speaking back then. His name is Paul. And Paul invited my wife and I. Paul invited me and invited me to bring my wife to his small group over and over and over and over. I don't think I ever told her that he was inviting us. I didn't want to go. I had no interest in making friends. I wasn't really even that interested in going to church. But my wife was. She wanted to be a part of a community, and our boys were small, and so I played along. And Paul asked me over and over and over and over to come to his group. I never did. Not once. And it was like the perfect time for us too. It was like the middle of a day on a Wednesday, and we both worked at the Showboat at the time, and it would have worked perfect for us. I just didn't do it. And I never told Sarah. Then at some point, I don't know how it happened, I don't even remember when it happened, but somehow I started going to a group. And I will say my life has changed because of that group, in a good way. I didn't go into it looking for besties. I didn't go into it looking for anyone to influence my life or my kids' lives. But all that stuff happened. It just did. And I'm so thankful for it now. I remember years ago when I was building my own business, long before I was thinking about ministry, and it was about 4 years ago probably. I remember we had small group at our house, and my friend Robbie was there, and actually his parents were in town, and they came to the house also. And for the first time, I shared with my group my frustrations with my job. And my job was a job that I created. You know, I built my own video production company. and it was doing really well. I was doing what I thought I wanted to do. But I don't know, just something felt uneasy. I just didn't feel happy there. I didn't know what was going on. So I shared it with my group. And you know what they did? They prayed for me that night. And I feel like that might have been one of the first steps towards me transferring from those seats up there to the seat right here. Because I had a tight-knit group of people who cared about me. And they prayed for me that night. So I can't imagine what my life would be like had I not joined that group. And the funny thing is, I ended up leading that group. And it was the same group that Paul led that I refused to show up to. So think about your own life. What difference could it have made had your dad had a group of men who are invested enough in his life that they could have seen it coming? And they could have headed it off. What difference could that have made in his life and in yours? What difference could it have made if your single mom had a deeply connected support system who could have seen the needs and met those needs? What kind of difference could that have made? What kind of difference could it have made in your adult children had, when they were younger, had they had a leader who could talk truth to them when they were unwilling to listen to mom and dad? What kind of difference could that have made? What kind of difference could it have made in your first marriage had you been a part of a couples group who saw it coming and they could have stepped in, done something? So the point of this morning, no matter who you are, no matter what phase you are in life, no matter how comfy things feel for you right now, no matter where you think you're going, you belong in a circle. You do. You just do. Life was created for that. Let's pray. Father, I'm so grateful for the community you've placed me in. I love being a part of this church. There's so many people here who I love dearly, who I love to see week after week. But even a step beyond that, Lord, there is nothing like those deep relationships that you've placed in my life. I don't see a route for me being in this seat without them. So thank you. Thank you for nudging me enough to get me out of my comfort zone. And God, for all my friends here in the room today, help them to understand that we weren't intended to live life alone. We weren't intended to just live with our spouse. We weren't intended to just live with our parents. That we were intended to live as part of a community. And when I think about your early church, God, I think that probably looked a whole lot like what our small groups look like. It's where we can get healthy. It's where spiritual growth can occur. So God, for anyone who's on the fence about joining a group, God, I pray you nudge them. Again, thank you so much for being faithful to us and to our little church here. And help us to fight for ways to follow you furiously. We love you so much. It's It's in your Son's name we pray. Amen.